For those of you who don't know who we are or what we're doing up here, I can explain. That doesn't necessarily mean that I will, because we, Calvus and I, unless you're Damien,
might be,
occasionally dabble in the incomprehensible. But in a good way, which indirectly brings us back to our reason for being here, because we have a good way to explain who we are. Flashcards!
I got him.
Okay. Yeah. First of all, we're a radio show. A radio is an invention of the Paleolithic age that converted paleoliths into audio frequencies, also known as sound. Hunter-gatherers of the day collected these sounds to play back at a later time for entertainment.
Sound, you're ahead of me.
10,000 years later, that's pretty much what we do, except that we don't have to simultaneously watch our backs for grumpy woolly mammoths. Another key difference, we don't eat our interviewees, not unless they're irredeemably appalling, and we have it
or
on...
Or very tasty.
Ah, yes.
We've done that.
And we have it on good authority that this evening's, or today's, entertainment has nary an irredeemably appalling tune on it.
What's this?
They're not for dinner.
All right.
Relax.
Paleolithic man typically played back his sound in what cultural anthropologists called a cave, a naturally occurring hollowed-out area in the earth that was the prehistoric equivalent of the ground floor unit of a Motel 6. We, on the other hand, play back our sound in the house, which is not so much a physical structure as it is a state of mind. I would explain that, however, I have something else on my mind instead. The 2009 MacArthur Foundation grant winners were announced recently, and once again, due to another so-called administrative error, Calvus and Damien were left off of the list. You'd think that after 14 years, that's how long they've known of our existence, and yet passed us over, we'd be used to this annual snub from John and Kathy. But no, we aren't. Like having one's tonsils removed with only a sharpened clarinet reed, it does hurt. So much so that we've decided to undedicate this episode of
In the House
to them. Sure, this may damage our chances to get that free loot in the future.
Never.
But never?
We're getting the free loot.
Ah.
Because of plans we have.
Oh, those plans. Yes, sometimes you just have to stand up for what you believe, and we believe that you, our listening audience, need to write to the Foundation at 140 South Dearborn Street, Chicago, Illinois, 60603, and in your own words, describe how Calvus and Damien perform such a noble public service that MacArthur money is long overdue them. If you can't think of anything to say, we can. And in fact, we have. For details, see Calvus at intermission. If intermission...
Oh, that's not the one.
Oh, please.
I have a wrong one.
Ah.
That's the flashcard.
Yes.
There we are.
If intermission has already come and gone, as have we all to some extent, please see him before the show. Meanwhile, a radiophonic show awaits. It's the 556th in a series, but the very first one held in the presence of two live bassoons. And sure, not all of our programs have lived up to the high standard that our listening audience hoped for. However, as noted before, we can practically guarantee you that this one will. So join us, won't you, as if you have any choice in the matter, in...
There's the door.
Yeah, but it's sealed.
Join us where?
In the house.
Thank you.
Undoubtedly thought that perhaps that did not sound like Jean Francaix.
It sounded a little French, though.
Perhaps it did. But in fact, a little intro to see the whole ensemble, that's the Brian Robison piece, Animal Psychology Unlike Ours. Most of what we will tell you tonight will be fiction. this, however, is not. The program in this one instance is incorrect. It says Animal Psychology of a Different Kind. The correct title is Animal Psychology Unlike Ours. And you'll get to hear it again right after the intermission. So now we go to the fictional portion of our
Says
program.
You.
Well, only because I haven't done the same research as you have.
Ah, yes.
So you're going to tell us, I believe, about Jean Francaix.
Jean Francaix. A stated goal of the composer was to give pleasure. According to records of the Paris National Infirmary, he also gave blood. Today, however, he gives us a dialogue between two querulous parakeets, as interpreted... Your card, please.
My card?
Your card.
Oh.
Two querulous parakeets, as interpreted by the parrot on whose opposing shoulders the birds are perched. Thank you.
Thank you. Roberta Frank on flute, Laurel Ann Maurer on alto flute with Jean-Francex Le Colloque des Deux Perruches. And for anyone who might come up to me and say, what is that, Francex? Isn't that be Francais? Apparently, Jean-Francex did in fact insist on his name being pronounced with the X sound at the end. Not fiction for a change, but you have some fiction coming up.
That's what you think.
Oh, all right.
Perfectly.
All right.
Makes perfect sense to me.
All right.
Flashcard.
Flashcard.
Elliot Carter Jr. and his twin brother, Jimmy, were simultaneously elected to the presidency of the United States in 1977. We all know that. However, only Jimmy reported for duty. Thanks to a long-repressed admonition from Charles Ives, the Carter family's erstwhile insurance agent, and that is true.
True.
Elliot instead opted to pursue a musical career. Now approaching 17 in dog years, both he and Jimmy continue to not be presidents.
And you see that on your program, it says, you know, something like Jean-Francex, 1912, 1997, Elliot Carter, 1908. Well, it's true. Elliot Carter's coming up 101 years old and still composing. You're about to hear a piece that is incredibly wonderful and dense, full of dynamics, full of all this exciting stuff. And he was 91 years old when he wrote that. He was still had another 10 years still to go with his composition. Finished an incredible piece for, was it percussionists just last year? Elliot Carter, who we have yet to meet and interview on our program.
We extended the invitation for him to show up. Did he?
He just wanted to stay alive longer, I'm afraid. So here we are.
Are you insinuating that we're dying up here?
We are, yes. Okay. I don't hear any laughter out there. Stephen Komowski, Betsy LeBlanc. Here we are. Elliot Carter Hioku. Thank you. Lebowski, Betsy LeBlanc. Amazing, you know, it continues to amaze me that Carter was 41 years old when I was born.
That's older than the birth of the clarinet.
And he can get all those notes on the page, and yet I can't calculate from 1908 to 2001 and come up with the fact that he wrote this when he was 93, not 91.
That was in dog years again.
Dog, I'm having trouble with all of that.
It's interesting, though, listening to it a second time,
yes.
How much it starts to make a little more sense, the two instruments sounding together.
And the conversation is, speaking of conversation, the piece we have coming up has an incredible conversation going on between two bassoons. Love those bassoons. And you have some important information about Sofia Gubaidulina.
She was the brainchild of Viennese composer Anton Webern, who was also one of her most important influences. Throughout her life, she enjoyed an on-again, off-again relationship with various celebrated clowns. I don't suppose you have any.
I have no clown cards.
Such as
they can just look at us.
Jacques Tati, Buster Keaton, and two-thirds of the Keystone Cops. In 1976, she wrote a sonata for two buffoons, as she was affiliated with them. However, the flutter-tonguing and multiphonics in the piece so befuddled the performers that a year later she revised it for two bassoons, and that's the version to be played today.
Thank you.
And Rachel Elliott on those bassoons. That took us on this incredible plunge into the sort of modernist era, and it sort of reveals how far we've come, that this music now sounds to us with a thrilling and exciting nature that at that time sent audiences screaming from concert halls. And today we listen to it, we say, wow, that is amazing, that is so thrilling, that is so exciting.
So thank you for not screaming.
Yes. Sofia Gubaidulina, incredible composer, still working. Wish Aunt Sophie had been with us here at
the
concert.
We invited her again, but she was
never
too busy.
Shows up. Yeah. So you have some more fiction for us.
No, no, but this is more research.
Ah,
so
more
correct
research.
Me if I'm wrong, but the OVOX, the first part of your piece, is the name of a red star in the southern hemispheric constellation of Godzilla. And one day, a black hole came along, sucked OVOX into its event horizon, and the star popped. And that is what you have depicted in your piece. The popping of the OVOX. For two unlikely instruments.
I think that's about as accurate as it gets for being completely wrong.
Thank you.
Yes. The piece came about because the Vermont Contemporary Music Ensemble sometime late in 1997 had done a long and very difficult piece of mine called New Granite. It was about a half hour long. Some of you may have come to that concert.
I didn't scream,
should have. It was very quiet, lasted for about a half hour, very static. We actually ran it with some visuals, and it was so cold sweaty for them that at the end of the performance, Steve came up to me and said, can you write something fun for us? And so I said, all right, if I have to. I've spent 20 years writing pieces that were not fun whatsoever for you. I think I can try that. So Rachel Elliott, Steve Klimowski with OVOX Pop.
Thank you.
Stephen Klimowski and Rachel Elliott. Before we go to intermission, there are CDs and books for sale over there, including one compact disc that was created just for supporters and audiences of the VCME. It's a limited edition, and you can only get it, at the last concert on Friday and this one today. So do take a look at Trade Winds of Vermont. There's also David Gunn's Somewhere East of Topeka. There's other VCME recordings. Many things to look at, purchase, and help support this organization. And we'll be back after intermission with the two last pieces. You're listening to Calvos and Damien
in the house
on the Non-Pop International Network.